Mike Wilner's on the line right now. Hello, Michael.
Hello.
Hey, by the way, how was your vacation? So I know it's always interesting when you're flying standby, and I love that your adaptability. Like, you go from maybe going to Japan to San Francisco for your vacation. I like that.
Well, I mean, you know it well, right?
Yeah.
And the people who are listening who have never flown standby, it's a gamble every time you go. I mean, there was a couple of years ago where I was going to take the kids to Disney for Family Day weekend. We wound up going to Minneapolis. So, you know, these are the things that can happen when you're flying standby. But yeah, this you basically have to go into it with plans like A through G, and whatever winds up working, wherever there are seats and whatever you can go, you go. And we wanted to go to Tokyo, and we had planned to go through Vancouver, but the night before we were scheduled to leave, and the flights from Vancouver to Tokyo were absolutely wide open. We would have had no problem getting on those. But there was a flight to the last flight of the night before to Vancouver got canceled. So there were 400 people all trying to get on standby flights to Vancouver the next morning. And so we had zero chance of doing that.
Yeah.
And then there was an earthquake in Japan.
Yikes.
So we didn't want to go. And we just shifted focus and wound up being able to go to San Francisco. And I've always wanted to do that Pacific Coast Highway drive. And
yeah.
I could not recommend it more highly. It was incredible. So we went to San Francisco for a few days and wound up in L.A. for a couple of days. And couldn't get on the red eye on the way home, so we spent a night at the airport waiting to fly and not flying.
Oh, but I've done that.
We did get the first flight the next day, so that was all right.
Yeah, I've done that. I've stayed at a lady who was also flying standby. I was trying to get out of, I guess it was Fort Lauderdale, and some lady also missed every flight, and I was looking at the prospect of sleeping in the airport, and she kindly offered to have me stay for a couple hours at her trailer park home, which was next to the dog track. So I did that for a night. So yes, I've been in a very similar spot, and I would also say that the downgrade from Tokyo to San Francisco, not as significant as Orlando to Minneapolis, I would say.
Yeah, no, certainly not. but Minneapolis was a nice couple of days, regardless, for me and the kids a couple of years ago.
Glad you enjoyed it, Michael. All right, so let's talk about this Blue Jays team and what's about to pass. First of all, I should ask you if you have any of the same information that Mr. Stephen Brunt has, seemingly, or, you know, the whispers are in his ears about something finally about to take place with this team as far as addressing some of the glaring needs still of this team in the coming week.
Yeah, Stephen Brunt is much better connected than I am. He's much more intelligent than I am. He's far better looking than I am.
Yeah,
so
than most.
He's got all these...
there's no shame in that, by the way.
Trust him. No, there's no shame in that at all. I think that stands for pretty much everyone in the industry as far as their relationship with Stephen Brunt. But the only thing I can tell you is that I have also heard from some other people who are also very well connected that they believe something is going to happen in the next week. So, but that's also just a factor of time. It's hard to believe.
Yeah.
You know, things are moving really, really slowly. And I got a tweet from somebody yesterday or the day before says, surely by this point you must have no faith at all in the Blue Jays front office. Well, no, nobody's signing anybody. That's the thing, right?
And don't call me Shirley.
You know, that too. But see, you can't use that joke when it's Twitter or text anymore, unfortunately.
Yeah, you're right, because it's spelled out.
Yeah, but you know, what outfielders have come off the board in the last 6 weeks? Colby Rasmus, who else? I mean, it's not like outfielders are flying off the free agent market and the Blue Jays are missing out on all these people. Everybody that they were interested in is still there, still available, still waiting to be signed. So they haven't missed anybody. They're waiting because there are a lot of very similar players out there, all of whom are still out there. So there's really no rush, even though it's January 14th already. But I think, you know, the deeper we get into January, the more dominoes are going to fall, the more things are going to change. And so, if something doesn't happen in this next week, then, man, something's really going to happen the week after that, because you don't want to get too close to spring training and still have all these holes to fill.
Right. We're like, I kept saying 6 weeks until pitchers and catchers. It's like just a little bit more than a month until pitchers and catchers report, right? Like, when's...
I think it's a month exactly.
Okay.
They either report on the 14th or the 15th.
Yeah, so, we're right there.
But, I mean, they can report on February 14th if you sign them on February 10th, too.
It's true.
It's not like they're not, you know, staying in shape and doing all the things that every free agent that who hasn't signed a contract yet is still doing all his off-season workouts and still believes he's going to have a job to report to in a month.
Yeah, so... Jose Bautista is obviously the most interesting guy when
he's
it comes.
He's the best guy out there by tons.
Yes, by a factor of 10. Yeah, he's quite good. In his bad year last year, at an OPS over 800, which Jay Bruce would like to have in a good year. You know, like there's,
yeah,
you know, right. There's guys that would love to have Jose Bautista's down year. He takes ball four like none other in the major leagues of baseball right now. And while he's not a great defender anymore, in a corner outfield spot, he can play it serviceably well and probably first base, a little flexibility there. He does things for you. But what do you believe? Because it really seemed, and I know you felt this way, and maybe you were the first guy to give me this indication, that right out of the gates, the Blue Jays were ready to move on from him. And maybe it had to do with what he provides and where he's going as far as decline. And maybe part of it is off the field stuff entirely. I still think like that's still a big part of this. And understanding Mark Shapiro, the things he said on this radio station last week, he understands that he's a valuable guy to have when you look at the back of his baseball card in 2017. I still feel like the other things in the draft pick as well are still... It puts me at less than 50% that Jose Bautista is a Blue Jay in 2017. Where are you on? Where are you on that?
Oh yeah, way less than 50%.
Yeah,
but I mean, I don't know if I would have said or if I did say in November that it was less than 5%, and I don't think it's that bad anymore.
No.
I think the longer this goes, Jose Bautista, I don't think is gonna not sign until June 15th. You know, he's not Kendrys Morales, who had to wait till after the draft 1 year because nobody wanted to give up a draft pick for him. Nelson Cruz, a couple of years ago, signed a one-year, $8 million deal because he had gotten tagged with that qualifying offer, and so whoever signed him was going to have to give up a draft pick, and they didn't want to do it, and so his price had to come down. That may have to happen with Jose Bautista, and for that to happen, he's going to have to swallow a lot of pride. I don't think anyone is going to be giving Jose Bautista a one-year, $20 million contract, and I think for him to sign for 1 year, that's the sort of thing that he wants. So there are reports that he said he'll sign 1 year as long as it's for more than the qualifying offer. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's happening.
Yeah.
And, you know, we look at the Blue Jays, and people are demanding action, and people are demanding that all these holes be filled. If you give Jose Bautista $20 million, that leaves you $5 million to address another outfield spot. Yeah, or less, and a backup catcher, or more. I mean, I think they have 25 to 30, but to address another outfield spot, which they may or may not do, a backup catcher, and the bullpen. And if you think the Blue Jays need two starting outfielders, you cannot want them to sign Jose Bautista, because if they sign Jose Bautista, then there won't be any room for another outfielder, assuming you want to improve the bullpen and have a decent backup catcher. Now, if you're okay with Jose Bautista in right, Melvin Upton Jr., Ezekiel Carrera, Steve Pierce handling left field, maybe Dalton Pompey with
Justin Smoke playing every day?
Huh?
And Justin Smoke playing first base every day?
Pierce will play some first, too. I mean, it'll be sort of a conglomeration of things. But I think that, yeah, but that's part of it. Smoke will get a lot of time at first base. Reese McGuire, AJ Jimenez is your backup catcher. Your bullpen is what your bullpen is right now. Sign Jose Bautista.
That sounds bad, Mike.
It doesn't sound good unless Bautista's price comes down to that Nelson Cruz level, which it very well could, and you know probably should if he wants to get this done already.
Right, but if that's the case, like there's going to be if he wants to do the 1 year thing and he wants to totally save face like. Coming back to the Blue Jays for what $8 million after turning down 17.2, I guess that's as much as Edwin Encarnacion like things didn't go the way he expected them to go this offseason, and you know didn't go the way a lot of people expected it to go for him and the Blue Jays included in that. At least he got $60 million. Like it's different. Yeah, it's different to go from that to $8 million for Jose Bautista when he was expecting to get, I don't know, at least 50-ish somewhere to come back for $8 million. Like, at least there's probably like a Phillies or a Twins out there that'll give him something a little bit more than that and give up the draft pick that's top 10 protected, right?
Maybe. You would think. Probably. But so far, not so much. But you're right. I think that if Jose Bautista is going to take that bargain contract, it's not going to be here. Yeah. It will be with somebody else. I think that's absolutely right. But we'll see. We'll see how things play out. But it would be very, very surprising to me if we were to see Jose Bautista sign in Toronto at that 1 year hugely discounted rate.
Talking to Mike Wilner. We'll talk about the alternatives to Jose Bautista in just a second, but what interests me greatly, Mike, is that, okay, this is not the year to pivot. We've discussed this, I don't think. Like, okay, the Red Sox are good. We get it. Like, they look really good. That's a scary-looking team, and you know, it's tough to win games in Major League Baseball. I understand that. The American League was tough last year, too. You don't just, like, punt on the season because other teams are good, and the Blue Jays are still good, and they had the best rotation in the American League last year, and it's returning pretty much the same. And while you can say there's some regression maybe to be had for some, maybe Marcus Stroman will be better. And yes, there's some work to do in the bullpen, blah, 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 blah. This is not the year, I don't think, for this team to pivot. But one has to be coming, you'd think, soon, because I don't see any way this team signs Josh Donaldson long-term. That makes no sense. And that's probably for good reason, because we know those deals don't generally work out even for a guy who's as good as Josh Donaldson, and he's going to be reaching free agency for the first time rather late in life because he reached the major leagues late in life. So he's an advanced age guy. So in a couple of years, you're looking at turning the keys over to somebody else. Like, how much planning goes into that now, Mike? Because it can't just like sneak up on you. I know it feels
hopefully a ton. I mean, you know, as much as you're aware of that, and you're absolutely right, Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro are very aware of that as well. And it's why they are, you know, sort of, well, I don't know why they're, I don't know if I was going to say they're half in, but I don't agree with the fact
well,
that they're half
in. They're kind
I
of mean, half in. They're trying to do two things at once here, Mike, which is difficult to do.
Right. It is very difficult to do. They are trying to do two things at once, which is stay championship level competitive while also making sure that there's something left in a couple of years. And when, you know, Troy Tulowitzki and Russell Martin move into their late 30s, when Josh Donaldson is probably not here. But you don't sign Kendrys Morales to a three-year contract if you're planning on punting. You know, he could because he becomes sort of valueless if that happens. And that's the kind of thing that makes you wonder. But I do think that they have an eye towards, they came in here with an eye towards making sure that there's a sustainable minor league system that continues to feed. And, you know, they brought in Harold Ramirez, and he's a guy who is an upper-level quality prospect. Rowdy Tellez has become an upper-level quality prospect. He'll be in AAA this year and has a chance to be in the major leagues. All these kids in A-ball are going to move up another step. You know, Sean Reed Foley is going to be a heartbeat away from the major leagues probably this year. So the feeder system is developing where maybe in a couple of years it is going to have a chance to start replacing people, but they've got to figure out what's going on. I don't think you're going to pivot to a total tear it down, start fresh rebuild. I don't think that's what we're going to see, but there are decisions that they're going to have to make in the next couple of years. If the Jays are no good in the middle of July this year, then that certainly accelerates the process, and I think that that's when we see Josh Donaldson on the block.
Well, and you know, you talk about all those young players, and yeah, there's some that look better than others, but the possibility of Sean Reed Foley, Richard Urania, Vladdy Jr., Reese McGuire, Harold Ramirez, like all those guys being contributors at the major league level is very slim. Like that doesn't happen.
That's the way it always works for prospects, right?
Yep.
But for me, prospects are assets, both for your major league team eventually and for other people. Often, you know, you can get more for them before they've played a game in the majors than you'll ever be able to get for them at any other point in time. So, hopefully, we don't know with this regime yet what carryover prospects they value and which guys they don't like. And so they may be inclined to let the guys they don't like move in trade. And when we look at who the Blue Jays could bring in and all that stuff for this year, we don't talk very much about potential trade partners and what sort of deals they could make that aren't free agent moves. But there's the possibility that some of these prospects do get traded for guys who can help win now.
So one of those possibilities that was really, really interesting food for thought last week was the discussion, I think Brunt brought this one up, or maybe it was Jeff Blair, maybe it was them in concert, about the Andrew McCutchen conversation when it came to the Blue Jays starting with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and it then ending at that point.
Yeah, it would end for me at that point, too.
It's interesting, though.
Why would I trade a 17-year-old top prospect for 2 years of a guy coming off the worst year of his career?
Yeah, no, understandable. It is interesting, though, like, man, if you're talking about Andrew McCutchen, say he's coming off yet another MVP-type season in the National League, and you get two seasons. Two seasons isn't one. I don't know.
Yeah, but he's not coming off another MVP-type
season. No, I know.
That changes the discussion entirely.
Mm-hmm. It really seems like, from everything that you're led to believe in the fact that, well, he's still a Pittsburgh Pirate, that the consensus around Major League Baseball is that there's something there with the season he had last year, Mike, we might be seeing some decline from him. We already know the defensive thing is happening him, maybe he can recoup some of that defensive value in a corner outfield spot, but his days of being an elite-level center fielder maybe never existed, but certainly aren't there now.
No, I think they did exist at some point in time, but yeah, he's much better defensively in the corner outfield spot now than he is in center field. But I think it may be more that the Pirates are asking too much. I mean, Washington came very close. They were very interested in him, but they got Adam Eaton, who is not as, or who has not been as good, but who seems to be making major strides, who's cheaper and controllable for a much longer time, for a similar package than what they were asked to for Andrew McCutchen. And the question is, do you want 2 years of Andrew McCutchen or do you want 4 or 5 years of Adam Eaton? And Washington decided they wanted preferred four or five years of Adam Eaton. And if Andrew McCutchen was still an MVP caliber player, at least as far as, you know, those evaluations were concerned, then they probably would have traded for him. So I think that there might be some sort of a little schism in value for McCutchen as far as what the Pirates want and what everybody else thinks he is now.
Gone. Here's a guy who's, yeah, middle 30s. He's 35 years old, turns 36 in July, coming off a good year. Switch hitter, can play all over the outfield, not center field anymore, really. And Blue Jays have a center fielder, so that's fine. Can get on base reasonably well, I suppose. But a guy that you'd be looking at a one-year deal for, he hit 12 home runs in San Francisco last year. Well, I mean, half the games were in San Francisco. But, yeah, that's not a great division for hitting home runs. Hit 12 home runs. As mentioned, a switch hitter. That seems like a guy that if you're looking to do two things at once, not lock yourself into anything long-term, get a guy that can help you maybe for a year. I don't mind Angel Pagan.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with Pagan either. I mean, he's had some good on-base years. He's been a guy who, if memory serves, is a lot better as a left-handed hitter as far as getting on base than he is as a right-handed hitter, which is reflected at least last year. And
I'll look that up.
Yeah, I'm looking it up too. Career-wise, yeah, 50 points in OPS better as a left-handed hitter. He's fine. He's a guy who would be fine. You slap him in left field. The problem is that I don't know if he is a right fielder. And it appears as though Steve Pierce is not a right fielder.
They were hesitant to play Melvin Upton in right field last year, too.
Yeah, and they played Michael Saunders in right. Well, Saunders has played right field at least a few times and a lot in Seattle. But, yeah, they need to have someone who can play right field. And I don't know if Pagan is that. I don't know if Gregor Blanco is that. I don't know if Saunders is that. Brandon Moss, all these guys. So it's a really tough call. I mean, I'm fine with Pagan. You stick him in a leadoff spot, at least against right-handed pitching, and you can lengthen your lineup a little bit. You can go Pagan and then Travis and then Donaldson and Morales and Tulowitzki, and that's a fine top five. But I want someone that I'm confident with being able to make that throw from to third base in right field.
Yeah. It's not Jose Bautista anymore, though, either. So, and he's a guy, I guess, is in the conversation as well. Hey, by the way, we talk about this occasionally because Baseball Reference is great on the nicknames. I assume you're looking at it on Angel Pagan's Baseball Reference page at the moment.
I actually moved on to Gregor Blanco's, but
yeah,
I'll go back.
Do you know what his nickname is? Because I'd never heard this one before.
Crazy Horse.
Yeah, did you know that? You're reading it off his page.
No, I didn't know that.
I didn't know that. I'd never heard that before.
I have no idea why. We'll have to figure that out. I kind of figured any nickname for Angel Pagan would have some religious connotations to it. But no, Crazy Horse is interesting. I'm just thrilled that one of the nicknames I have bestowed upon a player is on Baseball Reference.
Oh, who is that? Snakeface?
Yep.
That's actually on Scott Downs' Baseball Reference page.
Yeah.
That's incredible, Mike.
I feel like that's when I knew I had made it.
Now, did you email someone about that? Like, how did that happen?
No. I don't know how it happened.
That is amazing. It is. I'm looking at it right now. You're not lying. Incredible. And for anybody who's not aware of that, I think that was the result of a Jays Talk caller saying, well, he's just not intimidating enough to be a closer. And you're like, well, would you like him to have a tattoo of a snake on his face?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what happened.
And here he is. By the way, is Scott Downs aware of this?
Yep. And he's totally fine with it.
Of course, he should be. Yeah. All right. Before we let you go here, so we mentioned backup catcher isn't, I suppose, as big a deal as the corner outfield spots or the bullpen.
I mean, you'd like to have someone who's decent. You'd like to be able to give Russ Martin more than just one break every 5 days. And you'd like to have someone in whom you're confident if Martin actually gets hurt for a month.
Yeah, you're screwed either way if that happens.
Yeah, it's not that big a deal, right? I mean, they've got A.J. Jimenez and Reese McGuire.
Yeah. Reese McGuire apparently is a good defender, too.
Yeah, I was talking to him at the availability for after that prospect minicamp the other day, and he told me that he looks at Yadier Molina as a role model behind the plate. He says he loves to back pick, which is a lot of fun.
Sure.
So he's really active back there. As long as you don't throw it away, yeah. But so he'll be fun to watch, and he's going to get a lot of run in spring training, I would assume, because A, he's never seen these pitchers before, and two, Russ Martin's going to be away mm-hmm. at the World Baseball Classic, so we'll get to see a lot of him. But I think they want someone with some big league experience. They'd love someone who can swing the bat, even if he's not a defense first sort of guy behind the plate. There's no way Matt Wieters comes to be a backup catcher here. I've heard Hank Conger, which I'm not in love with. Nick Hundley is a very interesting guy for a one-year backup catcher. The guy I was talking about along with Willene Rosario before Rosario went back to Korea is Brian Peña, who's a switch hitter, has got a little bit of pop, who throws well, and he's still available. So that may be a possibility.
Okay, so that's part of it. That's, I think, the area of least importance the Blue Jays need to address this offseason. But I would say, like, corner outfield spot is the most important, but right there, like, neck and neck is bullpen. You got to add at least another arm, maybe two, and ideally somebody from the left-hand side or somebody that can get lefties out, I suppose. Like, maybe it's overstated that person has to be left-handed. Just has to be good because this is frightening.
It would be nice to have someone who's left-handed. But you don't want – I mean, like, I heard at the winter meetings, Jerry Blevins asking for $7 million a year.
That's, yeah, well, and why shouldn't he?
Yeah. Exactly. Why shouldn't he? But no one's given it to him yet. So, I think when you move beneath the top tier, it's going to be hard for those guys to get their money. But I'd be fine with a Javi Lopez, sort of like a little bit better version of Randy Choate, who's also who the Jays brought into camp last year but didn't make the team.
No.
Travis Wood is a guy who's getting a lot of attention, sure. Apparently. Okay. He was phenomenal against left-handed hitters last year. But there are some people who are looking at him as a starter, and I'm sure he'd rather do that. And, you know, you can get more dough that way. But they brought in a couple of guys on minor league contracts. They have, I think, four lefties coming in with big league experience who will be able to fight for a job in the bullpen. And we'll see what happens. I mean, they've got a strong top three. Gavin Floyd was really good at getting lefties out last year. If his arm can hold
that's a safe bet. Yep.
It only gave him 3 good months
okay.
last year. I'll take 3 good months from him again.
Sure.
I think that out of Bo Schultz, Danny Barnes, Ryan Tepera, maybe Chris Smith, out of those four guys, you may find a couple who are really going to help you too this year.
Okay. Scary. And I know paying big money for relievers is also scary, but I think it's
more
less
scary.
Yeah, I don't know if it's more scary than having Aaron Loop as your number one, or maybe your only left-handed reliever. I think that's scary.
Oh, if you can't get the job done, he's not going to be around very long.
It's true, and then you're really in a spot. But the Blue Jays managed to plug those holes midway through the season. It cost them about 5 wins, though, in April and May, games they were blowing in the 7th and 8th innings, and almost cost them a playoff spot, kept them away from 90 wins. But whatever, do whatever you want.
90 wins doesn't mean anything. They
made the playoffs on the last day of the regular season.
April and May was ugly, and they had to scratch and claw to get into a playoff spot, for sure, but they still got to the American League Championship Series again.
It's true. Michael, thank you for this, and it's almost time for your sojourn down to Dunedin. How exciting. Maybe I'll go down there again. I went there for the first time last year. I enjoyed myself immensely. I loved Clearwater as well. The beach was spectacular.
Yeah, Clearwater Beach is a heck of a place. I'll go down there in just more than a month. But more exciting is tonight.
Oh.
The Baseball Canada annual awards banquet that
nice.
I will be hosting for the third or fourth straight
year. Where is that?
Year. That's at the Dome, at the Renaissance, the Northern Lights Ballroom, the Renaissance Hotel in the Dome. I think tickets are still available. The best of the best of Canadian baseball talent will be there. It's always a wonderful event. It's one of two fantastic events that I have the honor of hosting in the next week. So
great.
Very, very exciting. There's this tonight and Thursday is the St. Thomas Sports Spectacular,
right?
In support of Special Olympics. So it's a very exciting week.
And you always ride in a limo with somebody important to that thing. So I can't wait to see who you're riding with.
No, I drive. I don't ride.
Oh, okay. I thought you rode in a limo.
I drive important people.
Hold on. In your car?
Sometimes.
Oh, my gosh. Nothing. No offense to your car. But, I mean, and it's not the car that's the issue. It's the upkeep of the car and its interior.
Well, the car is very clean and presentable for the important people.
Okay.
Last year, I drove Grant Fuhrer and Danny McManus.
Yeah.
The year before that, it was Devin Travis and Daniel Norris.
Yeah, that's the one I remember.
This year, I'm actually renting a car because my car is not big enough. Because I'm driving JYD and Jake the Snake Roberts.
Wow. Cool. Yeah. All right. Thank goodness they're not in your car. All right. Enjoy that, Michael. Thank you for doing this, and I'm sure we'll speak to you again soon.
My pleasure.